Arkansas Democrat Gazette has a rule that all of its regular columns must have a cute little name, and so, therefore, would mine.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with columnist and writer Jay Greeland, whose book Sweet Tea Times, Volume 1, Edition 1, collects his popular Sweet Tea newspaper columns, published by the Democrat Gazette from 2004 to 2011. And we will debut a brand new Sweet Tea column never before seen or heard.
The Case of Bozo's Missing Hand.
Howdy, boys and girls.
I well recall the moment when managing editor David Bailey appeared at my desk to announce his inspiration. And he paused in that inimitable down from the mountain way of his. Let's call it Sweet Tea.
Southern Stories, Sweet Tea Times, The Case of Bozo's Missing Hand, with columnist Jay Greeland on Arts and Letters.
This is your old pal Bozo.
I'm Jay Bradley Menick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities. Today, we'll be talking with Jay Greeland, who wrote three Sweet Tea columns a week for the Democrat Gazette, beginning in 2004 over a seven-year stretch. And we will debut a Sweet Tea column Jay wrote for this show.
The search for columns to include in Volume 1 of Sweet Tea Times was a painful exercise on many levels.
Jay Greeland, columnist, Sweet Tea aficionado, missing hand detective, also known as Johnny Sweet Tea, whose motto is...
Life's short, sugar's cheap, and sweet tea is fat-free.
Welcome.
Thanks, Brad. Glad to be here.
Well, I feel like candy corn in late December. I feel like fireworks in mid-July.
So you write in the column titled Johnny Sweet Tea
that my mission is to spread the gospel of sweet tea.
So what's the life of a sweet tea evangelist been like?
Well, it's great because sweet tea is what binds us all together. Everybody has a story about sweet tea, where they first tasted it, how great their grandmother's is. And so it's just been a very pleasant journey through the lives of people with that as a common bond.
Old men shall have visions, young men shall have dreams, poor men shall have wishes, rich men shall have schemes.
So why did you call the column Sweet Tea?
I became famous for my love of sweet tea 20 years ago in Alabama. And I wrote a column about how sweet tea typifies everything about the South that's good. And people wrote back with their own sweet tea memories. And then my boss said, we should do a sweet tea contest. So that's how it all began. People would come in and we'd have sometime 20 or 30 contestants who would make their tea and bring it. New York Times wrote about it. And then the Southern Living is the publication who tagged me with the name Sweet Tea Evangelist.
Do you remember your first column?
The first one was just an introductory thing. The second one was about a guy who had been a fish and game warden in Tennessee and in Arkansas, and he was old and arthritic, and he had captured gator poachers, and he'd had some life-threatening moments. He nearly drowned in a lake in Tennessee. He told that story.
I could talk a little louder. I could talk a little louder, but I won't. But I won't.
How do you often do the research for these?
The question I hear most often is, how do you find enough stuff to write about? And my response to that is, that's the wrong question. The question is, how do you find enough time to write about all the stuff I hear about?
I could burn the house down, I could burn the house down, but I won't, but I won't.
I've done this at several papers now, and once people figure out what I'm doing, I get calls and letters with ideas for columns about people. And usually I just will run a Google search and search through the newspaper's archives to make sure there's no felonies involving the people. And then I just set up the interview and go out and interview them.
I know the governor, and he's my cousin, and you know, and you know.
What, growing up, was your relationship to this elixir?
Well, it was a treat. We couldn't have a glass of sweet tea until we had finished our milk. And that was pretty easy until the summer that Mom discovered the concept of mixing half powdered milk with half whole milk, which a friend had taught her as a way to save money. And they did that for a summer, and it was awful. And I wouldn't drink it because it was so awful and it would get hot, then I'd really have to drink it. And so the sweet tea was a little harder to earn during the mixed milk days.
You wrote, "My mother's sweet tea was good as the milk was awful."
Yes, yeah, it was always worth the pain.
When you work for the Mobile Register in Alabama, you rhapsodized,
"Sweet tea embodies all that is good about the South."
Jesus calls me Peter, but Simon used to be my name. One of the chosen.
Or what's your favorite sweet tea column?
One of my favorite columns was based on a sandwich that I found in Children's Hospital. Our daughter had been sick for 3 weeks with Crohn's disease. And so we were up there all the time. And one day I noticed a Subway sandwich opened up on a table in the little waiting room. And it stayed there all day, and it stayed there and stayed there. And it became apparent that something had gone wrong, that somebody had abandoned their meal in there. And so I just wrote a column about that and sort of wrapped my emotions about that and some of the things I hear. You heard a lot of conversations on the elevators about, well, how long you've been here, well, we're gonna get out in a week. And sometimes you hear people say, well, I don't think we're gonna get out. I mean, that's kind of a sad one, but it stands out as one of those moments in my life. It also led me to a measure of gratitude.
He said that he would meet us on that shore at Galilee, but make sure that you tell Peter, 'cause I know he needs to hear from me.
As I said, the work of a sweet tea evangelist isn't real easy. In Oklahoma, for instance, the restaurants that serve the tea sweet are few and far between. Once in a diner, when I asked for rice to put under my pinto beans, the waitress looked at me as if I'd ordered a bowl of dirt. Arkansas isn't as uncivilized as Oklahoma, but I still have some work to do.
Such as?
Well, it's still too often when I go to a restaurant and ask for sweet tea, the waitress will reply,
"Sweeteners on the table, sugar."
So it's important to understand that there's a difference between sweet tea and sweetened tea.
The sweetened tea may not be sweet enough.
Right. It can be sweetened, but not sweet. There's a threshold that you must cross in order to authoritatively say it's sweet. I can't quantify it, but you know it when you have it. Some suggest I spend too much time talking and thinking about and drinking sweet tea. Well, I'm Southern Baptist. I can't drink. I can't curse. I can't dance or gamble or go to Disney World.
I'm J. Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to Arts and Letters. Let's snuggle into our comforters and listen to a brand new, never heard before, sweet tea tale from columnist Jay Greeland.
The Case of Bozo's Missing Hand.
I'm under the big topper now, over this carnival life. It's over, so overrated.
Bozo's right hand was missing, and he was a bit worried. He had left it on Main Street in a square of wet concrete sidewalk back in 1991. One day in the summer of 2014, he and Linda, his wife, had stopped for a visit. His hand wasn't there.
I lost it in my youth. It's over. Just give me 5 more gray nights.
He was upset, right, because he had walked down Main Street looking for
yes.
and they were gone.
They were gone. Nobody had notified them that they were gone. Nobody told him where he could find it. And so he was disappointed. The hand had been a big deal to them.
It's over, over this big top world is over.
So when I heard their tale, I assured them we could find it.
So how did you find out about this mystery?
A friend of mine had introduced me to Gary and Linda with the idea of writing a book about Bozo. And just in the course of hours and hours of interviews, I learned about the square.
Don't lie, don't you only know the truth? And I can't feel I lost that in my youth.
If you mention Gary Weir to someone in Central Arkansas, your listener may not recall the name. But if you say Bozo to anyone who grew up watching Little Rock television during the 60s, 70s, and 80s, several times out of 10, the former kid's response will include Bozo's trademark question.
Do you walk to school or carry your lunch?
Or carry your lunch.
Well, Jason, do you walk to school or carry your lunch?
Carry my lunch.
Well, all right.
Do you walk to school or carry your lunch? It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So he would do that purposely.
Well, he would try to confuse them, yeah. And then after a while, some of the kids you could tell were prepared with an answer.
And that was his trademark question.
Yeah, that's the one everybody knows. For 25 years, Monday through Friday, Bozo's image, his orange Titanic hair and greystone smile, eyebrows that out-arched the golden arches, filled Little Rock television screens.
Here's Bozo!
Well, hi there, boys and girls. Hey, here it is Monday on the Bozo Video Show.
At 3:30 p.m., his hour-long after-school show distracted kids from the things that kids are expected to do after school.
Let's get today's show underway right now with one of our favorite cartoons.
But in Central Arkansas, parents and kids deferred to the understanding that after school meant after Bozo.
Did you know that Elvis once went to the moon?
Bozo's image smiled from products all over grocery stores.
Before Gary Weir was Bozo, he was a television announcer.
And a weatherman.
In 1966, Gary Weir's boss, Bob Doubleday, promoted him to clown at Channel 7.
So Bozo franchises were all over the country. Mm-hmm. And I was a kid growing up watching Bozo. Mm-hmm. I never knew that. I think mm-hmm. everybody thought it was their local show.
Which was, I think, the success of the franchise, that it was like Santa Claus. There was really only one. Gary started out young at the TV station after a career as a disc jockey. And he did a little bit of everything, but his rise was pretty phenomenal, I think, for such a young guy. But Gary's recollection was that Bob Doubleday came to him one day and said, "You've never done anything serious around here. How would you like to be a clown?" And then he offered him the role of Bozo.
And they have Bozo training schools?
They have Bozo training schools. There was actually a school at a station in El Paso, Texas, but Bob Doubleday wanted Gary to go to the source, so he went up to Chicago, where he trained with the original Bozo, the man who franchised the image.
And we've had several famous Bozos. Willard Scott was one.
Right.
And I would imagine in most of the cities that it wasn't necessarily a consistent thing. It might go on for a couple years.
Right.
In his case, it was 25 years.
Yes, he was the longest running Bozo in the country. There were other cities that had Bozo on the air for longer, but there was more than one person who played the role. In Little Rock, Gary Weir was Bozo. Gary Weir was the first and only, except for the politicians, Bozo in Arkansas.
The Bozo Show might have appeared for more years in some television markets.
But more than one person filled the costume.
No one but Gary Weir filled the size 83 AAA shoes in Arkansas.
He was the first?
The last.
The only.
The only.
Bozo in the natural state.
Bozo left his hand, or to be precise, his handprint, in a square of wet cement that was one of 49 celebrity handprints on a sidewalk on Main Street in downtown Little Rock.
Okay, let me talk to you about that a second, because whenever I tell that to people, even old-timers here in Arkansas, it doesn't seem that they remember those handprints.
Who is that guy? How did he sneak into her life? He's not her style.
I think it was an idea that never really took off. I don't know whether it was the location, but I walked by it once in a while when I worked downtown and would notice it, but never really paid much attention to it. It's the sort of thing I would have naturally written a column about.
He's in the mirrors I pass by.
But they were just sort of there. There was really nothing even to tell you anything about it. I remember the first time I noticed them, it's like, well, this is neat, but what is it?
And where on Main Street was it?
It was at Main and 3rd, just on a little stretch of sidewalk there, just in front of an office building.
The other thing I don't quite understand is that they didn't only have Arkansas celebrities. Bert and Ernie.
Bert and Ernie.
Who aren't even real people, but other folks.
Well, it was people who happened to be visiting Arkansas. Rosalind Carter, for instance, was here for a speaking engagement, and so they would just get people who were here. That was the only Arkansas connection they needed.
And I guess there'd be a big ceremony, and they'd go down and put their hand in the cement?
And as it went on, the ceremonies grew smaller until Gary Weir's, when only Gary and Linda and somebody from the downtown partnership were there.
In setting the scene, the very last handprint, number 49.
Right. The newspaper published a photograph, not a story, and as far as I know, the TV stations didn't cover it at all. The Celebrity Sidewalk was a project of Downtown Little Rock Partnership. The first celebrity was Sidney Moncrief, a star at the University of Arkansas and in the NBA. On June 12, 1991, Bozo became celebrity number 49, and as it turned out, the last.
His hand was missing.
I've been 3 days now with no water. I've been 2 days now with no sleep. And the ship stores got lost when the last time I got tossed. I went drifting in the deep.
The search started with a telephone call in the summer of 2014 to the Downtown Partnership, when I spoke with Sharon Priest, who at the time was executive director.
Okay, so to step back just a second, you decide you're going to find out where Bozo's missing hand print went.
So I called Sharon, and it took us a couple of times to catch up, and we finally did. She knew that the squares had been removed, but that's all she knew.
But I'm seeing lights along the river, and I'm traveling all on my own. I'm seeing smoke up in the sky. There's a gleam here in my eye. I'm coming home.
Did you have any idea where they might be?
No, but I figured something that significant had to be somewhere, that they weren't just going to throw them away.
Missing.
It makes me sad they got rid of them. Was there really any reason to...
They were under orders to make that stretch of Little Rock more earth-friendly, and so they were replacing all the asphalt and concrete with this more permeable substance that would absorb more water than let it run off.
And this shadow on my soul, I've been with me most of my days, through the sunshine and rain, through the golden sugar cane, through the lamplight and the haze.
I think they preserved it more to keep from getting in trouble.
But I got lots of pictures.
Than for actually recognizing it for what it was. But they did preserve it, and there are still 35 unaccounted for.
35 missing.
You know, as Little Rock has had its resurgence, it's just, I bet they regret that decision.
Well, there's still, I think, an idea that they might put them somewhere else and feature them either in a building in a display or back out on the sidewalk. But there are a lot of interesting names there.
But I'm seeing lights along the river, and I'm traveling all on my own. I'm seeing
smoke up in the sky. There's a gleam here in my eye. I'm coming home.
Mark Weber, Deputy Director of Operations with Little Rock's Parks and Recreation, knew where Bozo's hand was.
2 days before Thanksgiving, 2014, the temperature was 36 degrees.
Kevin Pride, who is a maintenance supervisor for the riverfront and downtown parks, was there to direct 9 employees in unearthing Bozo's hand.
2 stacks, 14 squares,
35 missing.
So tell us a little about what you saw underneath the bridge.
There was a hurricane fence-style gate that was attached to the bridge abutment to the north on the riverside, and then just to the backside of the bridge there. It was open air, unprotected except for the fence. It seemed like a fairly ignominious fate for these celebrity hands. They were just stacked and unguarded. Mr. Pride's crew had set out 2 hard rubber pallets on which to lay the celebrity squares as they dug for Bozo's. Nothing to do but start lifting.
Looking through new real estate. The past is locked behind this door, and I can't believe this key is mine again.
The old bathroom scales I had brought showed each stone weighing in at 135 pounds.
So those things were pretty heavy.
They were heavy, yes.
It fits my heart so delicate, but every time I jerk the knob, my insides split. The scene remains the same.
First off the stack was the paver in honor of pilot Christopher McMahon,
who was a captain of the Concorde.
His hand was cast in June 1987.
The fourth was Bert and Ernie.
The fourth was Bert and Ernie.
I'm tired of trying. I'm tired of trying to know if the oscillations go. Am I constant now?
Eddie E. Combs, an employee of Parks and Recreation, lifted, without assistance, the 5th stone off the stack. And there was his name.
Carved in man-made stone.
Bozo, 25 years.
GW.
I'm coming home.
How long did it hang out in your garage when you brought it back?
About 2 months.
I'm coming home.
I kind of wanted to make a ceremony of returning it to Gary and Linda. So, and I wanted to record the moment. And so a videographer, a friend of mine, agreed to come with me. So it just hung out in my garage.
And I can't find my shoes.
We loaded it up the day of that Gary and Linda were expecting us in January, and I took my pressure washer with me, and once we had the stone delivered, I washed the stone in their presence and cleaned it up for them.
Oh, that's so nice.
I washed it up, and I returned Gary's hand to him on a cold January day in 2015.
So he and Linda stood there at the top of the driveway as you wheeled it to
yes.
them with a
yeah.
old red dolly?
Yeah, we had our own little ceremony, and Gary was pretty emotional about it.
What was it like when he saw it?
He just looked at it for a minute, and then he just bent down to put his hand in there. And he had to make several tries because the stroke has sort of made it hard for him to move. If you had known Gary in the Bozo days, you probably wouldn't have recognized him that day in front of his house. But as Linda, photographer Jerry Davis, and I watched, Gary bent slowly, extended his hand, and put it in the 23-year-old print. The fit was perfect.
Perfect.
Boy, it must have been emotional on many levels.
It was for Gary because of the stroke and his health. when the hand disappeared, I think it almost was symbolic to him that all this had no meaning anymore, and he just really wanted to find it. For me, it went from a story to write to helping Gary find his hand.
A mission.
Yes. How often in life do you get to do something like that? I mean, it's just a concrete hand, but it was a big deal, and it was gratifying to participate in it. Gary Weir was inducted into the Arkansas Entertainers Hall of Fame in 2013, and he would like to donate the square
for display in his Hall of Fame exhibit in Pine Bluff.
In Pine Bluff.
Hall of Fame director Susie Madsen enthusiastically agreed to accept it, but until then, the stone will remain in Gary and Linda's laundry room.
So your column ended in 2011?
Right. It was a huge disappointment, but I had 7 years of traveling the state, traveling the city, meeting lots of people. I'm grateful for the opportunity that the paper gave me to do it for those 7 years. I'm blessed to be married to a Southern woman who knows the difference between sweet tea and tea that's merely sweetened. Like the July and August humidity that binds us, sweet tea embraces us like an attic fan breeze on a summer night.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you to musicians and songwriters Shannon McClung, Kaz Haley, Kevin and Gus Kirk.
Well, I feel like candy corn in late December.
Bonnie Montgomery.
I could talk a little louder. I could talk a little louder. But I won't. But I won't.
Guitar Dave Frederick.
Jesus calls me Peter. But Simon used to be my name.
The Lance Family. Jeffrey Myers and Alan Farley. The Uh-huhs.
Who is that guy?
The Mallet Brothers.
And I'm seeing lights along the river. And I'm traveling all on my own.
Adam Simon.
Looking through new real estate. The past is locked behind this door. And I...
Randall Shreve.
I'm coming.
And Amy Garland and Nick Devlin for the heartfelt and inspired music. Thank you to our actors, Daniel Shelton, Riley Marie Dewberry Hiblin, Casey Hill, and Delphine and Islet Benjamin. Thanks to Mr. Adam Simon and Mr. Chris Hickey for the Bozoific production and sound engineering. Generous funding for this episode was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. A special thanks to Donovan Suit for the Bozo effects and mashup music. Thank you to Sweet Tea Times writer Jay Greeland, whose Sweet Tea columns have inspired the search for those missing parts in all of us. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's remember the words of that immortal clown, Red Skelton. If by any chance, someday you're not feeling well and you should remember some silly thing I've said or done, and it brings back a smile to your face or a chuckle to your heart, then my purpose of being your clown has been fulfilled.